Learn how to teach your dog how to be a service dog.
And welcome to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. And today we're broadcasting after technical difficulties at the hotel we're staying at. We are a few minutes late, but nonetheless, we are here. And we are sitting, and we're actually lying here with Savannah, who is Wyatt's. We are doing cancer detection here in Indianapolis, working with the Firefighters Convention and the Firefighters Cancer Foundation. And we are also launching our new program, SD2, which is an amazing new program where we check firefighters and other first responders with early detection of diseases and other health conditions. So, very exciting week. Technical difficulties aside, we are here for you. And we have an amazing guest today who I think everybody's going to enjoy again, and one of our most requested guests, the future Dr. Jody Joseph, who is at Cornell Vet School, the College of Veterinary Medicine up there in Hoff, also known as Ithaca, New York. Jody, welcome to the show. Sorry for the technical difficulties.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we're always thrilled to have you. You're awesome. Maybe a little off on timing because our timer is hooked up here, and so we're going to keep as close as we can, but we definitely need to talk with future Dr. Jody Joseph, who's learning all kinds of incredible things at the number one vet school in the country. Jody, you and I were talking earlier about the different things that go on at a vet office, and especially when somebody has a dog who might be a shelter dog or a rescue dog, and we don't quite know what the issue is. Maybe if the dog had a bite history, maybe if the dog had some kind of abuse, or maybe if the dog is just scared to walk on a shiny floor because it sees the carpets are outside. Tell me, Jody, what goes on in a vet's office, and how can our viewers, our listeners, kind of prevent problems before they happen?
So, Janice, I would like to talk a little bit about what goes on in the back. I think that is the biggest enigma of all veterinary clinics is when a tech says, okay, we're going to bring Fido into the back, what exactly happens? So I want to talk a little bit about the back from a few different perspectives. As a former vet tech, the back is kind of like a break room. To the veterinary technician, it's where they can cool off if they just had a challenging client or challenging patient or a challenging vet that kind of stressed them out. So it's kind of an opportunity to unwind. My nickname actually at one of my vet clinics was the squirrel because I like to hide food in the back. You know, what better way to de-stress than grab a quick power bar? So it could be used as like a positive thing for the tech. It's an outlet, but also it's important to know that when there's an emergency or a very important medical procedure, that's also going on in the back. So a tech has to be in one moment, they're checking a text message. The next moment, they better be, you know, on the operating table ready to go. So it kind of has that almost that dual role to the tech. To the veterinarian, time is money. And if the tech has everything set up and they're a good tech and the vet can just do what they got to do, go in and out and get on to the next patient, then, you know, the back is just a very quick, you know, in one way, out the other, to the veterinarian. But what's really interesting is what the back is to the dog. And I think that, or the cat, or the exotic animal. And to that, to the pet, the back can mean very different things. So I've seen the dog who comes in, the bright-eyed and bushy-tailed Labrador Retriever, who's like, oh, cool, new friends, new smells, new scents to mark. Hopefully they don't mark. But if they do, then the tech can clean it up. But
another role.
Yeah, clean up in aisle three, right? So to the dog, it could be a very exciting new place. I will say, though, it's probably less exciting than the waiting room because the waiting room will typically have a bunch of animals, and the waiting room
mm-hmm.
the techs are constantly cleaning it. The you know, so they might have like some chemical smells like trifectin or chlorhexidine. They might have some smells of blood if, you know, the blood is clean, but it might not, but you might, the dog has a stronger scent than people, so they might pick up on things that we wouldn't necessarily smell. And also in the back, the dog has a lot of sights, and maybe there's a dog in a cage barking or recovering or something like that. So they have a lot of different stimuli in the back that may or may not be beneficial. It might be a little overwhelming. So that's what's going on in the back for the dog. Also, it depends on the procedure. If a dog's going into the back to get their blood drawn, it's pretty painless. If a dog is going into the back to get their toenails clipped, well, that's just the worst thing you could do to a dog, right?
I think so. Either that or, you know, give it corn, wheat, or soy, yeah.
Right. So it's really important that the veterinarian and technician are trained to understand that whatever they're doing, that dog knows what's going on. If you're talking on your cell phone, if you're eating a snack, if you're yelling at your tech because they messed something up, that dog is going to feed into that energy. And so, you know, what we always say at United Canine Professionals is your energy affects your dog's behavior. Well, guess what? So does the vet's energy and the tech's energy and everybody else around them. So, you know, it's really important that clients understand that actually having the tech go into the back and get a snack, not a bad thing. Are they paying 100% attention to your dog? Maybe 80% on your dog, 20% on the Kit Kat. But you know what? If it's helping them calm down, you know, your dog is going to also calm down and have a moment to cool off. So that's not a bad thing.
And you know, Jody, that's a very interesting point you brought up, because I know all my vets let me go in the back with my dogs because they know that I have complete control of my dogs and they're all super well behaved. But if you are kind of a nervous Nelly, especially if you start out by saying, uh-oh, my dog doesn't like to, whatever, fill in the blank, you are already setting your dog up to fail. And that's why a lot of times the vet tech will take the dog into the back specifically so that your energy is not affecting your dog's behavior. Like Jody was saying, we teach at UnitedCanineProfessionals.com. So we are going to come back in a very few minutes with more about what goes on at the vet's office and a little bit also about what to do with your dog with vaccinations and all these different things we hear. So definitely stay tuned. We will be right back with some Shelter Dogs and Service Dogs.
Share the amazing stories of shelter dogs whose lives are changed by changing others.
NuVet Plus, your pet's best friend. NuVet Plus is an immune system builder that is safe for all stages of your dog's life. Helps eliminate most issues, including allergies, scratching and itching, hot spots, arthritis and joint issues, chronic ear infections, tear staining, lack of energy, digestive issues, and so much more. All natural, manufactured in an FDA-registered human pharmaceutical lab here in the USA, using ingredients sourced in the USA. Nothing artificial, no sugars, wheat, corn, or dyes. Never heat treated to help retain all the natural rich ingredients. Comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee and is only pennies a day. Call us Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. 1-800-474-7044. That's 1-800-474-7044. And tell them you are referred by All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Or go online to www.nuvet.com. That's www.nuvet.com. Use order code 33955. Again, www.nuvet.com, order code 3395. Put your pet on the path to good health.
When it comes to health expenses, dog owners have it rough. Now, thanks to veterinarian and dermatologist Dr. Kristen Holm, your dog can be goo healthy. There's Doggy Goo to fight environmental pet allergies, Goo Gut Rescue for rescuing your dog's gut health, and Goose Silver, a broad-spectrum supplement for the special needs of your senior varsity dog. So visit HealthyGoo.com today or call 855-246-2426, and your dog can be Healthy Goo, healthy.
Share the incredible process of shelter dogs whose lives are saved and are saving the lives of special needs children.
And welcome back to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. And we're talking with the amazing future Dr. Jody Joseph, who's been a vet tech for many, many years and is now at Cornell Veterinary School up in Ithaca, New York. And Jody's talking about different things about the back room and about having your dog taken into the back. And that this way you can understand that there's nothing creepy and scary in the back. But a lot of times it's just a nervous owner. Jody, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me back. No pun intended.
Of course, we love you.
So I want to also talk about, like, why would you bring a dog to the back? So a couple of things about the back is it's a safe place. If something were to go wrong medically, you have medications, you have an oxygen tank, a surgery table, all the type of equipment you would need for crises, whether it's a small animal practice or an emergency practice, all the important equipment you need is right there. So if you do bring your dog into the back, it's actually one of the better places to be. So that's, it's important. Also, some procedures have to be done in the back. You can't transport an x-ray machine or a large ultrasound machine. So some procedures legitimately, you're draining an abscess or a hematoma and you need a big sink for your Labrador retriever, you can't really do that on an exam table. So from a practical standpoint, some procedures have to be done in the back. Something that most don't really think about actually is how does the owner feel about seeing their animal having, let's say they're getting their blood drawn. Are they squeamish? Are they comfortable with seeing blood come out of their animal or blood come out of anything? I personally am disgusted by human gross. I can donate blood as long as I can't see what they're doing. When it comes to animals, I have no problem. And I'm sure owners have either the reverse issue or just can't handle blood altogether. And to avoid having an owner pass out, it makes sense to separate the dog from the owner, right?
Absolutely. And that's logic. And I think a lot of times what happens is that people don't realize in that moment that the vet tech wants to or the vet wants to take the dog back, that it's really just for the animal's best interest. One thing that I found, and I've dealt with hundreds and hundreds of veterinarians around the country, and certainly hundreds and hundreds of vet students around the country, one of the things is veterinarians, I believe, are generally the most altruistic of all groups. Medical school is much easier to get into than vet. It's extremely competitive. There are, 27 or 28 vet schools in the country, Jody? That's the number?
I think, 29 now, but close enough.
And that's in the whole United States. One takes roughly 100 at most, seems kind of an average, at least that other place that that always we talk about, Cornell, they take about 100. There are 29, they only take roughly, I'm sure some of them don't take nearly as much, let's say 2,500 people a year throughout the whole country. People are killing themselves, having to pay back $250,000 of loans just for vet school. And they're not doing it to make money. They're doing it because they truly love animals. Cynicism definitely pops into your life as you get a little older. But still, I think veterinarians have really the best of intentions at heart. They're good and bad and better and worse in every profession. But for the vast majority of veterinarians, if they tell you to do something for your animal, unless they belong to that one group that I know that has 92 veterinarians, just wants to make money, the vast majority of them genuinely are going to have your best, the dog's best and the client's best interest at heart. So if your vet, well, I'm sorry, Mrs. Jones, we need to take Fluffy into the back of the procedure. Let Fluffy go. Don't start out with, oh, honey, I'll be right here. Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, mommy loves you. Getting the dog all excited. And as Jody mentioned, one of the main of United Canine Professionals, where we train people and serve people like the amazing Future Doctor in natural canine behavior rehabilitation, is that we teach people, our people, how to change the energy of the human. So like Jody said, if you're like, oh, I don't want my little baby getting attacked, or if the dog is protective of the owner, he's aggressive, or just generally protective in public places, then why would you want the owner to be present so that dog you were setting up for failure by having the owner who the dog wants to protect right there? As soon as you take the owner away, the dog doesn't have a job to do anymore. So I think that's probably a pretty good synopsis and very well by Jody. Let's move on to another question that actually we got into the listener email. And Jody, this is about titers. And it was also asking about what vaccinations, like regionally, if you get a dog from one area, how do you know which vaccinations a dog is going to need in another area? I'm specifically thinking, like in Arizona, there's a big thing with valley fever. Well, New Jersey, they don't even know what valley fever is. In New Hampshire and Vermont, there is something called Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever. There is one disease, but they don't really have disease in Arizona. So tell me a little bit, teach everybody a little bit about titering. What's a titer, and what is the difference between titering a dog and just vaccinating the heck out of the dog, whether it needs it or not?
So I think from a practical standpoint, there are some vaccines that are standard across the board, one of which is rabies vaccine. I personally believe every dog should have a rabies vaccine as a puppy, and some vets feel comfortable giving it 4 months of age, some wait till 6 months of age, and that's going to be a person-to-person decision. If you have a dog who's immunocompromised, maybe you wait until their immune system is a little more stable. Distemper and parvovirus are also common, like default vaccines. But then if you live in like a wooded area, you might want to consider a leptospirosis vaccine or a Lyme vaccine if there's a lot of ticks around. But what I think is really important is to understand that just because you vaccinate once doesn't mean you need to vaccinate every single year, doesn't mean you need to never vaccinate again. It's really a case-by-case basis. So what I mean, for example, is you have a 15-year-old cat, and the cat has renal failure and or renal disease, kidney disease, and the cat is strictly indoors, and they're due for the rabies vaccine. Okay, well, as a veterinarian, legally, depending on where I am geographically, I might have to give the cat the vaccine or advise the owner gives the vaccine. Or geographically, if I'm somewhere else, I might say to them, you know what? Cat's 15. They're strictly indoors. That's your decision if you want to vaccinate or not. An option to not vaccinate is to do called a titer test. And a titer test is when you take a blood sample and you analyze to see if the antibody levels against the vaccine are still active. And if they're active at a certain level, then the veterinarian might be able to write an exemption letter to exempt the pet from having to have another vaccine. Now, this is a regional thing, not only state by state, county by county, town by town. So it really depends on where you live, what they will allow. Some towns will accept a titer test where the town next door will not. Some states will accept it. Some states think it's not valid. I have a background.
So this would be, Jody, this would be something that people would have to check on in their own municipality, and possibly even if they're using a local vet in that town, which many people do, they could possibly even ask the vet, who they should be trusting with, you know, obviously with their dog, what the situation is. So would you be able to stay on for another segment, Jody? Because this is fascinating, and I want you to go into this even more. But we do have to take a break. Would you hang on with us for a minute?
Of course.
Okay, awesome. Well, we will be right back with From Shelter Dog to Service Dog.
Learn how to teach your dog how to be a service dog.
Attention all pet lovers. Do you love your furry pet? Well, I want to introduce to you Paws and Silk, the first all-natural silk-filled pet bedding and apparel line that helps improve your pet's overall health and wellness. Paws and Silk is made using luxurious long-stranded silk and all-natural breathable cotton. Each product will help keep your pet cool and comfortable all year long. Paws and Silk pet beds and coats will also work as a barrier against dust mites and other allergens. Not only are they fashionable, but they also don't take on your pet's odor. Better yet, they're even machine washable. So, folks, here's what I want you to do. Visit Paws and Silk website at pawsandsilk.com to learn more about Paws and Silk and their incredible products. That's PAWSNSILK.com. You can buy directly from the site, and they even ship all over North America. How easy is that? For more information, go to pawsandsilk.com or call their toll-free number, 877-678-7455.
As a dog owner, you know that dogs can eat just about anything. But when food becomes a health troublemaker, or your animal has been on antibiotics or heavy meds, or GI issues set in, your animal's gut may be out of balance and needs Goo Gut Rescue. Goo Gut Rescue is 100% natural and veterinarian prebiotic and probiotic formulated to rescue your animal's gut from bad bug dominance. Remember, your dog's total health begins with gut health. Don't delay. Visit GooGutRescue.com.
Share the amazing stories of shelter dogs whose lives are changed by changing others.
And welcome back to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog. This is Janice Wolf. And we're returning with the future Dr. Jody Joseph. And she is just a wealth of knowledge, and I'm fascinated to know day by day all these amazing things that she's learning. But she's been a vet tech for many years. I think it's somewhere around 7 or 8 years, and has seen pretty much everything. So Jody's telling us about titers and the little different things, laws and so on. And, you know, it's really very fascinating because we're so conditioned through years and years that we have to get our dog a vaccination every year. And, you know, sometimes there are dogs, like Jody was saying, about who can be immune compromised. So there are other options available. Now, obviously, you're going to take good care of your dog health-wise, but one of the things you have to make sure is that you're doing the appropriate vaccination for the location in which you're living. And like Jody was pointing out, really thinking about it, even depending on your lifestyle. So if you live in a forested area versus an area that, you know, you're in a condo or a townhouse or in a apartment complex where there's not a lot of grass, you might want to handle that differently. And you should definitely talk to your veterinarian to decide what you should be doing for your particular situation. Jody, welcome back. And then let's keep talking about the titer testing.
So the titer testing, there are some pros and cons. I'll talk about the pros. Some good things about titer testing is you don't have to vaccinate. Depending on the location, assuming the municipality accepts the titer test, if your titer comes up high enough, then you prevented your dog or your cat from having that extra stress to the immune system. A negative, it's a little bit more expensive. So the test, depending on your location, let's say a rabies titer might be $90, but a rabies vaccine might be $25. So there is a price differential for clients who are, you know, financially strained. But the titer test is valid typically for 3 years, as a vaccine is typically, some vaccines are typically valid for 3 years. So it really, again, depends on the owner's lifestyle, the dog's lifestyle, the health of the animal. I don't believe that you should just vaccinate because they're due. I think it's important to make sure they're due and in good health. I think it would be very unethical for a vet to say, well, you're due for the rabies vaccine. You need to have it right now. And the dog is sick. I actually do have a personal story about that, which I won't use any names to protect the identity of the owner and the vet, but I'll set up a little scenario for you. A 10-year-old Yorkie with really bad teeth, and the veterinarian insisted that the dog needed a dental procedure, which was appropriate. So they scheduled the dental for, you know, a week later. And the dog actually came to my clinic post-mortem, meaning after the dog had passed. So you're going to say, what happened? The dog just had bad teeth, you know, routine dental. Well, it looked like the dog was overdue, quote unquote, due for their rabies. Veterinarian gave the rabies vaccine. 2 days later, the dog had passed. We did the post-mortem examination. We call it a necropsy in veterinary medicine. You call it an autopsy in human medicine. So we performed the necropsy, and the dog had an enlarged heart. So unfortunately, the dog was immunocompromised for other reasons, and the infection in the teeth and the enlarged heart, and then the rabies vaccine was the last hit to the dog's immune system. Now, I do not want to scare anybody into not vaccinating their dog, because in certain locations it's required, and in certain locations it's necessary, and other locations it's necessary and required. But it's important that your dog is really in a good physical health condition and a medical health condition before just giving the vaccine because they're due. Does that make sense?
This Jody, that I think would be a great thing, and hopefully you'll be with us many, many years, and even after you're a fully certified, licensed, and wonderful veterinarian in oncology. People, I really believe, don't look at the holistic approach to dogs. And I don't mean holistic medicine, but the logic of vaccinating a dog when you don't know that this cure is guilty. And I'm sure the reason for the veterinarians to want somebody to come in every year is so they can keep an eye on the dog and make sure that everything is okay. And cats think, or, you know, they can become a problem. But I think a lot of people, a lot of owners, view it as, well, you just need more money and you need me to come in every year for a vaccination because if I don't, you're not going to make money. Well, most vet clinics I have seen are jammed. Most veterinarians do not need more business. They have plenty of business. But if you think about it, does your dog absolutely need a vaccination every year? Probably not. Should you go to make sure the teeth are okay? Should you go to make sure that the dog doesn't have an onset of a heart murmur? Should you go to get that lump stuff out? Yes. So if veterinarians are saying, yes, I need you to come in every year, then we should be taking the dogs in at least and checking them to make sure that the dog doesn't have, or cat doesn't have any new issues that could cause a dog to have a problem. I mean, we've all had things, lumps and bumps, that we want to have checked. But I really don't think veterinarians are thinking, yeah, I keep coming back the same person. You want the dogs to be, and the animals to be healthy, but it's just so important, and I see it all the time. People say, oh, my vet, he just needs more business. He probably doesn't. He's just probably concerned about your dog. Am I right, Jody?
Well, I do want to comment on that. The vaccination, annual physical exam, I guess movement you could call it, part of it is protocol. It's legally the law to have your dog up to date on the rabies vaccine. If your dog gets bit, and if your dog bites somebody, first of all, you should probably call United Canine Professionals so that they can help rehabilitate your dog's behavioral issue. But also, if your dog bites somebody and they're not – up to date on rabies, then there's a legal obligation there to test that dog, to either quarantine it or depending on the severity or depending on the location, to euthanize or whatever. So part of the vaccine is to cover your end and cover the pet's end for a safety reason, for public health reasons. The idea of vaccinating for herd health and livestock, you know, to make sure that everybody's protected against bovine, whatever, leukemia virus. Clearly, you can tell I'm not a large animal person, but I'm the dog and cat person and the lizard person. But, you know, so it's really important to understand that vaccines are important as a preventative measure, but you need to make sure that it's really appropriate. There needs to be a conversation between the veterinarian and the client. Where are you geographically? What is the law? Are you required to do this? Should you do this? And veterinarians are becoming more and more open and aware to have these conversations. Should your dog have never get vaccinated? Because I know there's a lot of controversy with children and vaccines. I believe they should have their puppy series, even if you have to spread it out, you know, for immune reasons. I believe it's appropriate to have them vaccinated, but not over vaccinated. I don't think every 3 years is necessary in every single case, but sometimes that's a law and we can't avoid, you know, not vaccinating because we don't feel like it. That's not appropriate. There needs to be a medical rationale behind it. This dog's 15 years old and has cancer. Well, okay, maybe you don't want to vaccinate it because of that reason. Or they had a vaccine reaction in the past. So it's okay to really just have that conversation and figure out what's most appropriate for your case.
Basically we're talking about this and we're going to have to break again. But basically we're talking about this. Talk to your veterinarian, and we're going to ask Jody in a few minutes, won't you, when we return, how to start that conversation with your veterinarian about this. We will be right back with From Shelter Dog to Service Dog.
Learn how to teach your dog how to be a service dog.
Treat your furry best friend with a clear conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health. And just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing super gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy. And the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, a true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats, nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies. Enter the offer code RADIO at checkout and save 20% at clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all 4 paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
Share the amazing stories of shelter dogs whose lives are changed by changing others.
And welcome back to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. And we are returning with the future Dr. Jody Joseph. We are talking about some pretty awesome things, including how would you start up a conversation with your veterinarian about potentially having your dog titered, and what do you do if you do ask your veterinarian to do the titer, but they insist on the vaccination? Jody, I know, I'm sure you've had this happen to you at your veterinary hospital or several of them that you've worked at. What do you do to start up a conversation, maybe with a veterinarian who's maybe not so open-minded about titers?
Well, I think the first thing that you need to ask your vet are, what are the most common diseases that you're seeing in your clinic and geographically in our area? So if you're in, I don't know, North Carolina, they're probably seeing loss of heartworm, for example. So it's important. There's no vaccine for heartworm, but there is heartworm preventative. Vaccine is a preventative. So I, you know, speaking as a preventative standpoint, you ask them, what are the most common diseases and what should I be concerned about? And if they say, oh, every disease is possible and you need to vaccinate for everything, well, are there alternatives to vaccines? Do you provide alternatives? And if you're into alternatives and your veterinarian is completely closed-minded, maybe you're not at the right veterinarian. You know, it's important that the veterinarian and the client have an open conversation and that they have a trusting relationship. And if that veterinarian doesn't trust the client and they think that the client is, you know, going against everything they believe in, and if they're not able to listen to the client and communicate with them, then there's a break in that relationship. So it's important that whatever you say to your vet, how they respond to you, I think 80% of communication is nonverbal, will say a lot about not only how they feel about that issue, but how they are as a veterinarian, as a clinician. So, you know, you ask them, are there alternatives? Do you do titer testing here? And if they say, well, you know what, we don't do titer testing because it's in our part of the country, it's not accepted. You know, it could be a legal issue. It could be a municipal issue. Going back to that, you really have to see in your geographic area what's allowed and what's not allowed. If the veterinarian has never heard of titer testing before, it might be an opportunity to educate them. Did you know that I can draw a blood sample instead of just vaccinate? Do you guys offer that option here? And see what the veterinarian has to say. If you go to an integrative vet or a holistic vet, not only do they offer titer, but they often recommend titering as a default if that part of the country or that, you know, particular municipality allows it. So just knowing that it's available, you really have to ask them, is this right for me? Is this right for my pet? Is it right for where I am? You know, not only legally, but is a titer going to really protect me? You know, if you
right.
are
and you know
in
what?
A very wooded area,
I see
you
that
might
Jody.
Need a Lyme vaccine.
Yeah. And I see that with older dogs. Like, I have quite a few. I just lost two of my 15, one 15 and one 15-and-a-half-year-old dogs. My one, Angel, had not been vaccinated for probably 6 or 7 years because she built up an immunity. She didn't go anywhere. She was never out of the yard. We had a fenced yard. No wild animals in the area. And my veterinarian, you know, did titer her. And said, you know, she's probably never going to need another one. But the problem is when the dogs start getting a little older and their immune systems are a bit compromised, that's when you should be titering. Maybe we don't need to titer a three-year-old dog because maybe it hasn't built it up. But, you know, there is a lot of controversy, I know, because I never had a smallpox vaccination. That's the one that everybody gets that little round, weird circle on their upper arm. Well, my mother didn't want me to have those vaccinations. And at the time, it was an option. But most people did get them. So it doesn't matter that I didn't get it because everybody else was pretty much getting it. And there hadn't been a case of smallpox in like 50 years. And now it's probably, obviously, you know, another 50 years on top of that. Why are we still vaccinating for something that doesn't exist unless, obviously, you're traveling, you know, around the country, around the world, and you're going to Africa, and, you know, you're going to be exposed to Ebola, in which case Ebola, I think, basically within 24 hours of being in contact with it, you're dead. So, you know, that's kind of a self-regulating disease, because by the time you get it, you're pretty much dead from it. But, you know, you have to ask your vet, and Jody really, you know, in explaining this, I think it said some really amazingly wise things about reconsidering and reevaluating. If you feel that strongly about not vaccinating your dog if the dog is titered and your veterinarian is kind of stuck on that, maybe it is time to find a new relationship with a new veterinarian. You know, most of the time, our veterinarians, we keep, very few people really change the veterinarian unless they do something wrong or they have a big issue or they don't pay their bill, whatever. But, I mean, I had the same veterinarian, my one, Dr. Bev Capel, who's up in Chestnut Ridge, New York, then at the barn. Bev is awesome. We were joking about it. I've known Bev since neither of us were having to color our roots, at least 20 years. And I respect her highly. Part of why I respect her is that I've had so many animals who I've brought, and she's always, even, I'm not going to say that she never made a mistake, because she has, even if it was something I didn't agree with, I knew that she was telling me what was the right thing to do, because we had that great relationship. And that's what Jody was saying. One of the things that's so important is finding a vet, like your own personal doctor, who you have that close relationship with, who you can call and say, listen, you know, I'm really worried, what would you do? And you can trust that that veterinarian is going to give you advice that he would give to his own family members. And that's really important. So in our last segment today, we're going to be talking about a few other medical things. And I'm just so grateful to Jody for being here, because she's just a wealth of knowledge. And every day I can't believe all the new things she's learning. And I have a lot of respect for her, not only as a future veterinarian, but as a very, very wonderful certified natural canine behavior rehabilitation specialist through United Canine Professionals, because she knows that we don't have to euthanize the dog for behavioral issues. The only dogs Jody will ever have to euthanize or often back for are dogs who are in pain and who are hopeless. And that's what it should be. It shouldn't be where we're trying to euthanize dogs who are healthy, 4 million a year. But we'll be right back. Help from Shelter Dog to Service Dog will continue.
Share the incredible process of shelter dogs whose lives are saved and are saving the lives of special needs children.
For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now. Introducing the amazingly stable Bike Toe Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Toe Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Toe Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Toe Leash, visit BikeToeLeash.com. That's BikeToeLeash.com. Bike toe leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is BikeToeLeash.com.
Learn how to teach your dog how to be a service dog.
And welcome back to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. And we're talking about some really important medical issues that are so, so critical for you as an owner to make sure that you're educated and that you understand what you need to do. And, you know, we are talking a lot about the same topic, but we're not talking about the exact same thing. Because what we're trying to do is educate people that, you know, you've got to ask questions. You've got to feel comfortable with your veterinarian. And as we were discussing in the previous segment, you got to have a great relationship with your vet. Jody, we were also talking about something that I think is really important. And I know one of the veterinarians who has been working for quite a while was a big proponent of raw diet. Everybody who's listening and listens every week knows that I'm a huge fanatic about organic. Now, there are most raw diets, and most kibbles are not organic. I use an all-organic. I'm in love with it. I use the NuVet vitamin, NUVET.com. Merlin's kibbles, United Canine Professional recommends them and uses them. And SB2 and all of the different organizations we work with, and even many, many of the rescues using the NuVet vitamins, because they are the best and they are made in the human pharmaceutical lab. Definitely something that you're going to want to put your dog on. And there's like an order code if you want to order it, because they only sell to professionals, is 40562. Now, the thing is that I'm a freak about organic. So I use an all organic kibble. But Jody, I know you're a big fan of raw. And I know a lot of people who are, and it can certainly be a wonderful thing. For me, it would be very difficult because I'm in Indianapolis today, which for them, doing cancer screening. I happen to be a hotel that has a very good freezer, you know, refrigerator freezer. But, you know, most of the time I'm out there, I can't, you know, raw meat that I'm dragging around with me. So tell us a little about the benefits of raw and how raw, like a raw diet, you know, assuming we can get an organic or at least a grass-fed raw or natural, how can raw diet kind of help a dog who might have an autoimmune or compromised immune system?
Well, Janice, the topic of raw diet could be its own radio show. It could be its own series because it's very complex. But just to kind of give you the, I guess, nuts and the kind of the quick version of it, I will be honest, I'm personally a proponent of raw. There are people who are not. And if you are interested in going raw, you need to do it right. Because if you don't do it right, it could be very, very wrong. And one of the best ways to do it correctly is to go to a board-certified nutritionist and to have them make a specific formula that will accommodate your pet's needs. Maybe your pet has a specific service they provide, like they're a racing dog or, you know, a working dog. Or maybe they have a certain medical condition where a certain meat would be better than another meat. So there's really not a one-size-fits-all formula. And unfortunately, from a research standpoint, there's not enough research out there to confirm the benefits of raw. It's mostly anecdotal because the big companies aren't going to fund research that competes with their products. I don't think Hill Science or Purina is going to fund a raw diet AFCO trial.
Probably not in this lifetime anyway.
So it's a little complicated. What I would tell you is, it's having a conversation with your vet. Why do you want to go raw? What can they do to support you or, you know, tell you about the risks? How do you properly handle raw? Is it something that if a person is immunocompromised, is it appropriate for them to really be handling it for their dog? You know, so there's a lot of underlying questions. And really, at the end of the day, what I found, because I actually wrote a research paper on raw diet, is that it's really a lot more about the owner than about the dog. The owner's lifestyle, someone who travels probably doesn't have the capacity to carry raw meat. Somebody who's immunocompromised probably shouldn't be handling raw meat if there's a potential for exposure to different pathogens.
Or someone with very young children. I know we always talk about that at United Canine Professionals. And if anybody has questions, they can actually go on our website at unitedcanineprofessionals.com or call us at 855-4K9 pros, and we do talk about that even with raw bones, where if you have young kids, you know, children under 8 or 10 who are on the floor and might have a slightly immune compromised body anyway, especially young children, infants, you probably don't want to use raw knuckle bones, even though we love for you to use those three dogs. You got to be careful. So Jody, tell us the 2-minute lowdown on raw and what people should ask. And I'm also fascinated about the board certified nutritionist. What should people ask if they are interested in feeding a raw diet?
I think the biggest question to ask is which diet's appropriate. So there are freeze dried raws, there are frozen raws. There are raw meat that's just meat, which is inappropriate because it's not balanced. But then there's raws that are pre-made. There are recipes online, but you have to be very careful because, again, you don't know if the person who wrote that is a board-certified nutritionist or board-certified nutritionist, like a nut. You know, you just don't know who came up with that formula. So I think I would really like to come back and do a whole like show on raw if you're interested.
I think that would be an awesome thing, and let's set that up. We'll have Jody back on to really go into raw. Maybe we'll have her actually on our Friday show, which is for the Love It Dog, because this way everyone from our Tuesday night show will probably listen to the Friday night show anyway on the same great network will be able to ask questions. So let's do that, Jody. Let's have it set up where everybody can email us questions. You can email Kyle, K-Y-L-E, at United, the letter K, the number 9, United K, 9, Professionals, with an S, .com, Kyle at UnitedK9Professionals.com, and email her your question. She will get them to me and Dr. Jody Joseph, and we will be able to not only go to general questions, but even going into it a little bit more about the benefits. And it's really fascinating, Jody, that it is really just, there is, again, not a one-size-fits-all. And this is what's so frustrating, and I know you, because you went through all the United Canine Professionals training, you know that it's so related to the human. But it really is, in this case, even with a diet, very related to what the owner's lifestyle is. Well, we are actually coming down to the end of our show. And Jody, thank you for the offer. We're going to take you up for 1 hour of a nutritional consultation with you about raw and perhaps about some other issues as well. Be able to speak a little bit more and get you some questions. So thank you so much again, Jody, for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me, Janice.
Well, you can have fun, and I hope it gets warmer up there in Hoff. And for today, we are about ready to close off. And we will come back also next week with some more training tips, and we are starting some new classes in the spring at our farm in Missouri, and we will be also starting in our new farm, gorgeous place in Missouri, and then Texas, with if people want this, training their dogs to be a service dog or a therapy dog or get involved in our cancer detection program or even become, like Jody, a natural canine behavior specialist who goes out and saves dogs' lives by preventing the behavioral issues and fixing them. So, again, thank you all for tuning in. Thank you, Dr. Joseph, and we will be saying hello to you again 1 week from today. We'll see you soon.
Share the amazing stories of shelter dogs whose lives are changed by changing others.